danger, I was not averse to adventure, and having my fortune to make, was always on the lookout for El Dorado, which, to ardent souls, lies ever beyond the next turning. Consequently, when I saw a light shimmering through the mist at my right, I resolved to make for it and the shelter it so opportunely offered. But I did not realize then, as I do now, that shelter does not necessarily imply refuge, or I might not have undertaken this adventure with so light a heart. Yet who knows, the impulses of an unfettered spirit lean towards daring, and youth, as I have said, seeks the strange, the unknown, and sometimes the terrible. My path towards this light was by no means an easy one. After confused wanderings through tangled hedges and a struggle with obstacles of whose nature I received the most curious impression in the surrounding murk, I arrived in front of a long, low building which, to my astonishment, I found standing with doors and windows open to the pervading mist, save for one square casement through which the light shone from a row of candles placed on a long mahogany table. The quiet and seeming emptiness of this odd and picturesque building made me pause. I am not much affected by visible danger, but this silent room, with its air of sinister expectancy, struck me most unpleasantly, and I was about to reconsider my first impulse and withdraw again to the road, when a second look, thrown back upon the comfortable interior I was leaving, convinced me of my folly and sent me straight towards the door which stood so invitingly open. But halfway up the path, my progress was again stayed by the sight of a man issuing from the house I had so rashly looked upon as devoid of all human presence. He seemed in haste, and at the moment my eye first fell on him, was engaged in replacing his watch in his pocket. But he did not shut the door behind him, which I thought odd, especially as his final glance had been a backward one, and seemed to take in all the appointments of the place he was so hurriedly leaving. As we met, he raised his hat. This likewise struck me as peculiar, for the deference he displayed was more marked than that usually bestowed on strangers, while his lack of surprise at an encounter more or less startling in such a mist was calculated to puzzle an ordinary man like myself. Indeed, he was so little impressed by my presence there that he was for passing me without a word or any other hint of good fellowship, save the bow of which I have spoken. But this did not suit me. I was hungry, cold and eager for creature comforts, and the house before me gave forth not only heat, but a savoury odour which in itself was an invitation hard to ignore. I therefore accosted the man. "Will bed and supper be provided me here?" I asked. "I am tired out with a long tramp over hills and hungry enough to pay anything in reason." I stopped, for the man had disappeared. He had not paused at my appeal, and the mist had swallowed him. But at the break in my sentence, his voice came back in good-natured tones, and I heard, "Supper will be ready at 9, and there are beds for all. Enter, sir. You are the first to arrive, but the others cannot be far behind." A queer greeting, certainly, but when I strove to question him as to its meaning, his voice returned to me from such a distance that I doubted if my words had reached him with any more distinctness than his answer reached me. "Well," thought I, "it isn't as if a lodging had been denied me. He invited me to enter, and enter I will." The house, to which I now naturally directed a glance of much more careful scrutiny than before, was no ordinary farm building, but a rambling old mansion, made conspicuously larger here and there by jutting porches and more than one convenient lean-to. Though furnished, warmed and lighted with candles, as I have previously described, it had about